guest on today, Devin Blaine from the Blaine Group. Devin's a longtime colleague and friend who is a master at communications, whether it's using communications to grow businesses and families, whether it's dealing with the crises that erupt, and keeping an eye on communications technologies as they change and directing families or really clients as to how to deal with those changes. Devin has been kind enough today to hang with us for both segments of our show. First part of our show today is going to be discussing managing your legacy through effective communications management. I think I violated a couple of English style rules there by using the same word twice.
It's okay.
Oops. Oops. Devin, are you with us?
I sure am.
Outstanding.
And if we can get you to come just a little bit closer to your mic, you're a little soft here. We don't want to miss anything you're saying here.
Okay. So. Is this better?
Yeah, much better here, because you're a communication specialist. We want you to communicate
so
today.
So you want me to communicate. Got it.
All right. Devin, can you tell our audience just a little bit about yourself and your firm, the Blaine Group? It's got a great history and, if you'll forgive the pun, a great legacy.
Oh, thank you so much. I started the Blaine Group 40 years ago this month, actually. I've been in the public relations, marketing, advertising, crisis PR business most of my life. And we work largely with fast-track emerging growth companies of all different industries. Many of those are family companies. We work with a number of 30, 40, 50-year-old family-owned businesses, and we're generally brought in when a new generation is taking over at the helm, and they're changing up the way things are done.
Very good. Tell us just a little bit more about the Blaine Group's history.
Well, besides winning a number of awards for our work for some corporations and some growth businesses, we have also represented four bestseller books through the years, and many of the authors are repeat authors. So we promote one book for them and come back, you know, two, three, 4 or 5 years later when they write the next one. So many of our clients are with us long-term or on and off, on and off, on and off.
In other words, you have successful clients.
We have many successful clients. I wish they all were, but they don't all take advice well.
Well, as we had said at the beginning of the show, we're discussing, in this segment anyway, legacy and how to grow that legacy or maintain it through effective communication. So my first question to you, and I'm sure our audience would love to know this, is that familial or corporate legacies are, you know, those are somewhat ambiguous terms. How do you define those terms, those two terms, with regard to what you do?
Well, let's look at corporate legacy, because the clients we work with, even if it is a familial legacy, it's represented in a corporate form. And very often there's a family-owned business that is the bulk of the wealth of that family. There may be six or seven siblings and the parents who started it. And as with any large group of people, there can be a number of issues involved. We have other clients that, while no one in the business is related, they view their team as a family. So it doesn't have to be family by birth. It can be by assimilation.
What we would term today in urban culture as brothers from another mothers and sisters from another mister.
And, you very know, good. Very well said, Mark.
Thank you. Well, I was going to say, you know, you're so right. When we work with some of these family-owned companies, what we've seen is that management team has been together for decades, either within this business or on multiple ventures. And at this point, the kids and the grandkids are calling the other partners who may not be blood related, but they're still uncle and aunt, and they get together for the holidays, this sort of thing.
Yes, that's absolutely typical.
Well, that being said, how is the Blaine Group really helped clients in building and maintaining the legacies, corporate or familiar, or even better yet, both?
I thought about this as I was preparing for today's interview. And one of the things I always tell clients is that when it comes to communications, the best defense is a good offense.
Mm-hmm.
So the most important thing to do is to build a good name and a good reputation now. You may never have a problem. That should only be the case. But having a good name, a good reputation, will stand you in very good stead throughout the life cycle of the business. And what came to mind was a San Fernando Valley headquartered business that we worked with that was really global in scope. And we were brought in by the brother who was taking over from his father. And this was a company where, at that time, inventory was done by going out into the warehouse and manually counting each SKU.
Mm-hmm.
It was not yet computerized. That was evolving. And he brought us in with an interesting mission. This was just about the time the Gulf War started. And they were the leading provider in their industry.
Mm-hmm.
And he was concerned about losing market share. So we were not brought in to increase business or increase market share. He wanted to maintain.
Mm-hmm.
And we set up a program of public relations, advertising, some community relations activities that would keep them very visible in a number of ways. But he was quite clear that we would only be in place for a year. He wanted us to teach the internal team how to do what we did. So we really set it up for them to be able to take it over thereafter.
Well, and that kind of leads into one of my passions within the family dynamics and family-owned business arena, which is training the next generation. So let's say, for example, and you and I have discussed this sort of issue before, we've got a family that has made a fair amount of money. They want to go ahead and, let's say, lead a philanthropic effort, maybe have a college building named after them, and they want or create a foundation that's going to do a lot of good. How would you go about putting together a program to get the word out, both for fundraising purposes and for general awareness purposes? And then how would you also go ahead and train the next generation into maintaining and growing this name legacy as compared to a financial legacy?
The communications tools are the same no matter which it is, Mark.
Okay.
And hopefully they have professional communicators on board, because not everybody can implement a program such as that. This company happened to have some very seasoned professionals in-house, so it was a matter of teaching them a few things they didn't know and letting them take over. Now, certainly we could work with someone to get the right people in place,
mm-hmm.
and do that, or in some cases, clients want to keep us around because they appreciate some of the value add that we can bring to the table.
Well, what are some of the...
Okay, the Rolodex that spans those 40 years is one prime example.
How has that Rolodex helped in communications? Can you give us an example?
Well, seasoned journalists for years have said there is, and this was pre-Google.
Wait, there was life before Google?
There was. We have always said that anything you want to know is only two phone calls away. The trick is knowing which two people to call. And one of our current clients gave us a very specific research request recently,
mm-hmm.
something that in most cases the demographic firm would be retained to do.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a question that had been posed to them by a retailer who may carry their products.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not something that's Googleable. Believe me, we did that 18 different ways, and none of them worked. And we found a source that would give us the info if we signed off on some legal documents, which that was not an appropriate thing to do. And I finally found a direct mail house that found a Cornell study that had the answer. So it took more than two phone calls, but it took less than 2 weeks.
Fair enough. So let's go back to that idea. Let's say I'm incredibly successful, and I create a foundation that is out there to, in theory, help end all animal kill shelters. And I want to reach out to the community and grow this. I put my own money in, but I need more funding, or I want more funding. Do you have a couple of different tactics or strategies that you could, or I should say, really, do you have a strategy, including several tactics, that would go ahead and move that out there? And of course, I don't want you to give up your secret sauce, but just kind of give our audience an idea of how one would do this.
I can give enough of the secret sauce so that people realize they can't do it on their own, Mark.
So please, secret sauce away.
So the first thing they should do is get some very positive media coverage on an ongoing basis.
And how do you do that? I'm going to jump into my own question. How do you do that? How do you reach out to, and how do you know the right media to reach out to?
Well, if you don't know, again, that's a research issue.
Mm-hmm.
Those of us in the profession buy a very expensive media database that gives us a lot of that information.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very easy for us to compile that media list, develop the press materials that will give that media the kinds of information that will cause them to want to write a story. And then it's a matter of a whole lot of follow-up to ensure that it occurs. And we like to reach out to the press on a monthly basis with a new angle, a different story, a different way to spin it, so that if they didn't like the first approach, there's another way to go.
Now, so I'm trying to, going back to my original thought, which I admit I derailed myself on, but so I'm trying to bring out the knowledge about my foundation. So first, mm-hmm. we hit the media sources, and we get out a different,
yes.
story about the foundation and what it's doing every month or so. What else am I going to do?
You're probably going to do some direct marketing for fundraising.
Mm-hmm.
That is way less expensive than putting on events.
Really?
Many nonprofits love to put on events. And volunteers love to be involved in the events because it's fun. It's also very expensive. You're generally renting a hotel or other facility. You're having food catered. You're probably retaining someone to get auction items donated. It's a whole lot of work, and very often the expenses eat up most of what comes in. The best thing to do is, besides a direct mail effort to get donations, find some deep-pocketed corporate sponsors. And that's harder to do, very easy to say. And it takes long-term planning. Many corporate philanthropic budgets are funded in October, and it's an annual decision. So in October, they decide what they're doing for the coming year. You miss that window, you've got a 15-month wait.
Mm.
So you need to work and plan way ahead.
It's really funny that you are, I won't say picking, but kind of picking on the quote-unquote philanthropic gala, because I'm on the board of Beverly Hills Heritage, and this Saturday from, I believe it's from 3 to 7, everybody, we are having our spring gala at a very, very gorgeous and, of course, architecturally important home in Beverly Hills. So I'm going to do a little free promoting for my philanthropy and say, if you have any interest in Beverly Hills history or Beverly Hills architecture, feel free to email me, and I'll give you that email a little later in our show. We'd love to have you come on by for all you can drink, all you can eat, and it's just some outstanding people. So thank you, Devin, for that perfect segue.
Great event, and I'm hoping the home was donated.
It actually was, to the best of my knowledge.
That's the best way to do it.
And are you going to be joining us? Are you going to be joining us, Devin?
I actually have a client with an art exhibit that night.
Perfect. You can go from the late afternoon from Beverly Hills Heritage right over to the art exhibit. You'll be having a very high culture evening.
Yes, I would.
So, all right. So we're going to go ahead and we're going to do some direct mail. We're going to go ahead and do some media stories. How about social media?
Social media is really important, but it is only part of the mix.
Mm-hmm.
And in working with a lot of startup companies, many of them technology-based, a number of them think that all they need are a lot of Facebook followers, and their business will be wildly successful. I had the opportunity to serve on a panel out at the Altadena Incubator one LA Tech Week, and it was an interesting panel. The title for it was Money and Marketing, which comes first. And a mutual friend of ours with a venture capital background was on that panel. And his comment to those tech entrepreneurs was that when a VC sees a business plan and the entrepreneur says, well, we have all these followers and we have an active social media program, that's great. So they're popular. But when they see that the company has been covered in a major trade publication, it comes with a lot of credibility.
Mm-hmm.
And even better, do they have a customer or two?
Mm. That's outstanding. We have about 3.5 minutes left in this particular segment on this topic of our show. Of course, we'll have you back for the second part of the show as well. So within that time, I've got two questions for you. The first one is, where do you see, you know, understanding that a majority of our audience are business owners with a family and they want to get to or are at that point where they're really thinking about the legacy and going through the legacy process of creating, if not a family office, at least some level of family organization to continue their financial, their philanthropic, and their cultural legacy onwards. How do you use communications management in moving that, both the business and family, forward? Is there kind of a cohesive plan you put together? How do you do that?
Once we understand where the family is today and where they want to head, we can put together the plan that gets them from A to B.
Do you see?
And those are the kinds of questions that we ask in first meeting.
So that process is very much of a collaborative process with the family. It's not you and your team going off and figuring something out. It's you're going to work with the family to create this and meet their goals.
Absolutely. I mean, we can put a plan together that may be a fabulous plan and will accomplish nothing that they want to achieve. So we need that communication from them up front.
What do you think the three most important components, and with just a moment or two left and two questions left still, because of course I'm OCD ADD at times, what do you think the three most important components of managing the communications plan is?
Consistency.
Mm-hmm.
Communication.
Mm-hmm.
And planning.
And actually do the planning process and see it all the way through.
Yes. Entrepreneurs are often accused of being ready, aim, fire.
And oftentimes they're actually ready, fire, aim, aren't they?
Or in some cases, aim, aim, aim.
So for this segment, what would you like our audience to take away from this? What do you want to have stuck in their mind?
like them to think about where they are and where they're headed.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two most important things before they embark on their own communications program or ask a professional to work with them.
Mm. So would you say that you're a critical component of both the business planning and the family planning process?
I believe we are.
All right, folks, we're getting ready to go to commercial, and we'll be back with Devin and a different topic for her to give her wisdom on in just a moment. Devin Blaine is rejoining us to discuss what happens when things go wrong and how do you manage the family or business enterprise's legacy and reputation in the face of disaster. And for those of you just joining us, Devin Blaine and the Blaine Group are a very long-time public relations and communications firm that has dealt with more disasters than most of us could even comprehend. Is that right, Devin?
That's correct. We're known for getting that famous Friday at 4 p.m. phone call saying, we think we may need crisis PR.
So what do you see as the most common, let's call it crises, disaster sounds so horrible. What do you see as the most common crises that occur for both businesses and families?
With businesses, with families, with people, it's so diverse. It can be having done business with a vendor that wasn't ethical and the wheat gluten that you've provided to all the major pet food manufacturers internationally is tainted and pets are dying. It can be a family member who has a drug problem or a sexual addiction or gambling issue. There's so many different kinds of crises that it's almost difficult to predict what might face one particular entity, although that's what we suggest is part one of the exercise if one is doing crisis planning. Mm-hmm. Usually, we're doing crisis management after the event has occurred when there's no time to plan and way too many things have to be second-guessed.
I have a sneaking suspicion that you get that Friday 4 p.m. call after management has already started reacting to a crisis. What do you see as the most common errors that either family matriarchs and patriarchs or corporate management make when they have just been hit with a reputational crisis of some form?
They're scared. They're afraid that they're going to lose the business, lose the company.
Mm-hmm.
And they absolutely don't know what to do. And one Friday, 4 p.m. phone call came in. And when the marketing firm for this company started to explain the situation to me, mm-hmm. it had already been in the headlines for 10 days.
Ooh.
Their client's name had not yet come out. So it was not something I was unfamiliar with.
So I take it that one of the big mistakes that they make is actually not getting a hold of you or someone like you early enough in the crisis.
That's correct. I can go through a number of examples of a client in the chrome plating business that always overbermed to be super safe called me one day and said, you know, I pulled up to the office yesterday, and we'd had a toxic spill that went into the city sewers. And there was a TV news truck out in front of my office. What should I have done?
Ouch. So everyone remembers Horshack from Welcome Back, Kotter. Well, Paul is sitting here jumping up and down with his hand in the
exactly.
air.
Exactly. I feel like Horshack sometimes here.
Paul,
we had some Twitter questions come in here, and I'm just going to pick one that I thought was kind of appropriate. You know, we're talking about family crisis here. And how is that different than a – I know these are big families, and we're thinking them as a business, as an enterprise here. And they may or may not have a family office that's coordinating all this. But the question is, How do you get the family to speak with one voice, particularly when I can think of cases in the past where the families are separated or they're feuding or the kid is estranged from the family and suddenly he does something horrible and goes to jail and there is, you know, horrible things are happening or he disappears and, you know, how do you get them all together to speak with one voice?
Well, it's no different than in a corporation. And I know Mark is a big advocate, a family constitution.
Yes,
and
I am.
That probably should be part of that constitution, just like we suggest in a company that a condition of employment be that every employee, particularly the receptionist, know and sign off on the standard operating procedure if there is a call from the press.
See, I would have never thought of that.
Same way.
Yeah, I would have never thought of that. And I would think there would be wealthy families. There might be 20 or 30 heirs to something, and all of a sudden something has happened, and the family has been put into uncomfortably into the press here because of one member's actions or something that's happened here. I would think that they may not all – one of them might want to speak, one of them might not want to speak. They all might want to have a different approach. So you're saying work it out beforehand and talk about this. What happens if we're thrust into the press here?
Have it agreed and signed off on with consequences in advance.
Well, and that, of course, is interesting. Let's say that the family, being probably a very typical family, has not done that. And all of a sudden, like you said, Devin, the press is sitting out at the front door. What should the family or company management do to deal with the traditional media when that's going down?
Well, hopefully there's been a spokesperson selected in advance who can address these issues and address them with speed. That doesn't mean shoot from the hip. You need to gather your thoughts and do so in a cohesive way. But that first response should never be no comment. That looks bad, sounds bad. You can say something equally ambiguous and sound way more on top of it. And one of the retorts that we recommend is we're aware of the situation and we're looking into it.
And I take it that you would certainly recommend that for family members who have not been had media training or have not been the appointed spokesman as compared to their perhaps hopping on a soapbox and giving their thoughts on it to the media with a bunch of microphones out there.
that's ugly to even think about. And don't fire off that letter to the editor, that impassioned piece that you write because you're upset. I had a friend's son do that recently, and she sent it to me saying, "What do you think?" And I thought he should have written it and deleted it.
So we've been discussing the traditional media waving the microphones around. Now, really, what's a lot more out there, so to speak, social media, where we have a lot of folks out there who think that they're interviewers or that give out social commentary, assuming somehow that they think that they have influence out there, and these days they do. What do you suggest a family or company management team does with regard to social media and their reputation and their legacy, both before a crisis arises and even worse, when a crisis arises?
Well, beforehand, as I said earlier, the best defense is a good offense.
Mm-hmm.
So have the media on your side because of all the excellent communication and all the good work you have done in the community, and that community today is not just necessarily local. It can be national. It can be global.
Mm-hmm.
But families that have a legacy very often do things, and they need to let it be known what they're doing so the press has them in a favorable light. And when that's the case, they'll be treated fairly by the press. Not always in social media, which is why sometimes it's better to not react as much on social media, but react with traditional media.
Hall is doing his horse shack imitation again.
I'm wondering, and maybe this is unfair to spring this on everybody, and maybe you don't want to comment on this, but I'm
bring it on.
I'm just thinking of recent, you know, public meltdowns here. I'm thinking of Bill Cosby. And all of a sudden, here's a guy who had wonderful relations with the media and the world, and everybody thought of him as this wonderful person. All these horrible allegations now come forward. Women standing up saying the most horrible things about him, that he raped them and all these things. And I'm thinking of the one and only interview he did. He went, it was some, I forgot the outlet, but he basically started threatening the reporter when he brought up the question. And the guy was kind of embarrassed, said, I got to ask you this stuff because it's all over the news. And his reaction was, you know, get your boss on the phone. How dare you? Yeah, right. And
That's smart. He had to know that would come up.
Yeah.
Unless he's living on another planet.
Yeah.
No, my personal favorite, and Paul, I'm glad you brought up Bill Cosby. My personal favorite is going down right now, Dolce Gabbana.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about that one. All the things that they've had some interesting dealings with the press and stuff.
Well, and they managed to offend so many people, not only just the gay, lesbian, transsexual, and bisexual community, but they've also managed to offend everybody who's in some manner or another used science, I'm going to say, to
a little broader group of people.
Exactly. So let's say, Devin, that you were actually representing Dolce Gabbana as
they might call her after this interview. They might say, well, you know, we need some help here.
I suspect the very first thing that Devin would do is throw her head through a wall, and probably any crisis management firm would after how things have gone down. But do you have any suggestions to our audience out there about, A, let's not make incredibly controversial statements if your business relies on good relations with the public, but what would you do right now if you were in the shoes of their PR company?
I'm not conversant enough with their situation to address that. It sounds like they've made a bigger faux pas than Chick-fil-A did.
Oh, yes. at the very least, they've managed to offend many more groups. what they basically said, Devin.
Skill to do that.
Give them the background. Give it the background.
Yeah, the background, Devin, and this is really just breaking over the last 24 hours, and I do know your schedule. So
we're taping this in March of 2015 for those listening in the future here. So
what ended up happening, Devin, is they came out and basically said that gays and lesbians and related should not be parents, and that the use of science to in vitro fertilization and this sort of thing was basically against God, and that it was horrible. And I'm phrasing this very kindly.
Yeah.
And why are they even commenting on this?
That's always the question.
What they do?
Yeah, that's always the question that comes up. I know they did it with the Chick-fil-A, and they have a very religious corporation, and they close on Sundays, and they follow their fundamentalist Christian philosophy to the core. And many people admire that they carry that through. But at the same time, why then do you feel the need to go out and take a public position if you know this is going to offend a sizable portion of your audience here?
When you have Sir Elton John declaring a boycott on you, I'd say you blew it.
But and what effect then does that have on the family fortune? We know of, again, Bill Cosby. I can only imagine that he's lost a lot of endorsements and money and personal appearances and stuff because of this crisis. Tiger Woods. Look what happened to Tiger Woods and all these things.
And my own personal favorite from the Food Network, and I always forget her name, I call her Mrs. Butta.
Oh, yeah. Paula Deen.
Paula Deen.
Yes.
And yet I still, when I was out Christmas shopping, I still saw some of her dishware.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
And probably on sale, though.
Who is back in that genre in almost as strong as she was before is Martha Stewart.
Amazingly, yeah. She looked like she was a dead-in-the-water brand after all that
and
came out.
She's almost a classic case, being the comeback queen.
So how do you come back from that? Is it you admit your sins and come clean, or is it you go out and do community service and win back the hearts of the public here, or is it...
All of those things can work in one's favor. Certainly, Americans love underdogs who come back.
Yeah. They love to build you up and tear you down and then see you come back again. It almost seems like the National Enquirer story, you know. Yeah.
Exactly. So that can work to advantage particularly in this country, more so than others. With Dolce & Gabbana, I would say I would risk reaching out to Elton John and seeing if they could somehow make peace and maybe even have a joint press conference.
As a matter of fact, didn't Eminem do that with Sir Elton John when they had a very public disagreement?
They didn't. In fact, they went on, I think it was the Grammys or something, and performed together later on and made up in the public here and said, okay, we may disagree or whatever, but we can still talk about these things and work together.
That would be an ideal way to do it.
Devin, let me ask you, what do you think Martha Stewart did correctly after this, after her conviction? And how did she come back? Any kind of two or three specific things that she did that were just the right things to do that you noticed?
Get your notebooks out, families, here. We're going to give you some tips here, right?
She paid her debt. She did her time.
Mm-hmm.
And she kept quiet during that period. I think that helped. She didn't exaggerate it by screaming and yelling and everything. She took her medicine and quietly sort of disappeared for a while.
She did a lot of yoga. She did things that were good for her during that period of time. She probably used it as a time to rest and reflect and plan her comeback. I don't know that for a fact, but it certainly appears as though that's what she did. Mm-hmm. And she came back being as strong and as professional as she ever had been. Like, she almost had not skipped a beat.
Well, let's use that as a segue into my next question for you, Devin. What have you guys done to help clients that have faced massive reputational disasters?
Be communicative. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that the client needs to take every media opportunity. In fact, very often we will ensure that they don't, because they're pretty fragile at that point. And you don't want a fragile CEO dealing with press.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's better to have their attorney take those calls. In the pet food crisis that I alluded to previously, it was 24/7 for 2 weeks. And I would come home from the office at 10 o'clock at night, and that's when the calls would start coming in from Asia.
Mm.
And I almost laughed at one Wall Street Journal reporter from Shanghai who absolutely insisted that when the journal calls, they find that people want to talk.
Even if they shouldn't.
At that point, yeah. To be ready to burst into laughter.
I think of what happened at the BP.
Said, oh, I am so sorry.
I think of what happened in the BP scandal and that one, you know, a comment
that's
that
a perfect example.
You know, I know they got a crisis, but I got to go yachting or whatever he said. Something that just sounded so insensitive and just literally just squashed their reputation.
The president of BP said, "I want my life back."
Yeah, right. Yeah. I want my life back. I'm sorry we've blown up the Gulf, but please, leave me alone.
Yeah. It's not your problem.
I have one other question I have to ask at this opportunity, because I know you're very well-known PR person. I know you did a lot of crisis stuff here. And many years ago, 20, 30 years ago, I was an entertainment publicist, and I had a chance to work with a guy who's still pretty much on top, a guy named Stan Rosenfeld, who handles Robert De Niro and Danny DeVito and Charlie Sheen. And the question that I have, I haven't talked to Stan in years, but I was surprised that when Charlie Sheen melted down publicly and then started making comments that many thought were anti-Semitic and all this other stuff, Stan took the unusual stand of firing him, of coming out and telling the press, "I'm done. I've fired him. I have nothing to do with it." Have you ever fired a client? I've never seen that happen before, where the PR people give up on their own client here.
I fired the first client I ever had.
You did? Okay. Well, that's the secret to success then, I guess, here.
And it was not a crisis situation, that this guy was supposed to become the next Steve McQueen. And I set him up to present awards at a motocross race at Ascot Park. And TV crews were coming to cover. And his managers and I spent the entire day at the races with him. And just before the end of the race, he decided he was sick and had to go.
Oh, I've been there. And now you're supposed to call up and make an excuse,
He'd been there all day. There was no excuse to make. You suck it up, you present the awards, and then you get sick.
Well, I'll tell you my story, and it's only because he's now long since gone. Nobody would probably remember him anyway, but there was an actor by the name of Edward Albert, Eddie Albert's son, and he had a couple of movies. He was a client of mine for a while, and he was on a TV series at the time called Yellow Rose, which was didn't go anywhere but had a huge cast. Sam, I forgot his name, now the guy married to... I can't think of any of their names. Now, anyway, but it was Cybill Shepherd was in it, and all these other famous people were in the series. So he decided he wanted to make some quick money, and he begs me, he says, get me on one of those things where you go sign autographs at some shopping mall. And so there were people who booked those, and so I said, you really want to do this? Oh, yeah, I want to go make $5,000-$10,000 here quickly. And then we booked him, and then he called up and just said, I don't feel like going. Get me out of it. So I got them out of it, and I called them. They were devastated. You know, they had already advertised, and people were coming. And so I said he was sick and all that other kind of stuff. And they called up the NBC's publicist, who I still remember, Tony Angelotti, who was a famous press person over there. He called me up and said, so he called Edward and said, what's going on? And Edward said, oh, I fired Paul. I never asked him to do any of that stuff. I would never do any of that type of stuff. Oh. And he totally threw me under the bus here. And I just totally blew up. I was like, oh, my God. You know, you begged me to do this. And then I graciously got you out of it. And here you are, you dirty rat. And you're going to tell the world that it's my fault here.
So I think we
No thanks being an entertainment press agent, I'll tell you.
It's a good reason why I'm in finance and law. Right. Now, that being said, I think we've only got a moment or two left.
Yes, we do. Sorry.
No worries.
We're talking war stories here. I can't help it. I mean, I'm sure she's got many she could share with us here like that.
Well, let me ask you, Devin, as we've only got a moment or so left, what would you tell our audience, the business owners and the family business owners and even the families, what would you give them as one or two takeaways regarding what they should be doing, what they should be thinking about when a crisis occurs?
I would urge that they think now about what could occur and they start to plan how it should be handled.
Okay.
Most important is to have a trained spokesperson, preferably two, because one's not always around, and the other is to make sure that everyone has the protocol down for handling media inquiries. Because there's many a really well-meaning receptionist who takes a call and tries to handle it and deep sixes the company because not with malintent,
right?
Because she doesn't know how to handle it.
So, in other words, we could say that ignorance itself could become the crisis.
It can, and has.
So let's say that some of our audience want to reach out to you and discuss planning or in the middle of a crisis themselves. How do they reach you?
Best way is 310-360-1499.
Outstanding. Devin, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it. I'm sure our audience does. And I look forward to chatting with you again soon.
My pleasure. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks.